The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Gas is nearly $2 more per gallon than it was this time last year. That means on average, people are spending $160 more per month just to fill up. Even gas station owners are fed up. This one in Minnesota putting up a sign saying, quote, "We hate our gas prices too."
But it's not just gas that's costing us more.
That's exactly right. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, prices are up across the board. Rent has jumped more than 26% from last year. Food prices are up. We're not just talking about eating out. We are talking about going to the grocery store and eating at home. That is up almost 12%. That's the biggest increase since 1979.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Wow, how old were you in 1979? Huh? You probably don't even remember. It's crazy. They're talking about all the changes we're seeing. What about shrinkflation? I've been seeing a lot on that lately, too. And if you're not familiar with shrinkflation, that is fundamentally when you're buying the same product at the same price, but you're getting a little bit less. You know, whether it's a box of tissues or a box of cereal or the detergent you use, that, you know, it's not unethical because the bottle labels it, right? It says, okay, you're paying $5 for this, you know, and, it used to be this big. They shrunk it a little bit by their height and their width and give you a little less content. So visually, you think you might be getting the same thing. When you see it on the shelf, you wouldn't really know. But you're going home with a little bit less. You got to get back to the store a little bit sooner. So it's wild. There's all this stuff is connected to. I mean, I think about where we are. Those gas prices are, they hurt. They do. They really hurt. I think about my young adult kids, you know, who are out there not making a lot and, trying to get by. And you know, when you're it costs you twice as much to fill up your tank, that can take a bite out of your budget, right? The president, a lot of this, you see what happened. And again, I try not to be partisan here. But you take a look at the policies that went into effect, the executive orders that were signed in his first day of office, right? We see what happens with energy independence to going to energy dependence. We see this, hey, inflation's transitory, right? We see all of these different monetary policies. We see the amount of money, the kindling that was thrown the trillions of dollars worth of money that was spent. I mean, that is superheated the economy, and we see this inflation. There's so much to talk about. I don't want to get into all that. You know, I mean, you can go through a litany of things, but the president wrote a letter to the leaders of major oil companies. I don't know if you heard about this, and he's warning them that if they didn't bring down the gas prices, he's going to invoke emergency powers and force the companies to increase their refinery output. And of course, the oil companies, they're stunned, right? They're absolutely astounded at this because they've been going full bore. And when Biden came into office, what did he do the first day in office? He took out that executive pen. He put the brakes on it. He issued all these new regulations. He shut down pipelines. Of course, there has not been a refinery built in our country in 50, maybe 60 years. But the number of cars have skyrocketed in that amount of time. And it's obvious to some people that the president and this current administration, they may be doing this to move the needle, to change your attitude, to get you to say, oh, this is gas is so painful. Boy, I wish I could have an electric car. But then the problem with the electric cars is they're so expensive, right? Not everybody can afford an electric car. Where do you pump it? Yeah, I saw an article. Let me see if I can pull it up here real quick the other day. And I was going to reach out to the person who took this trip. Interesting story. The woman wrote an article. She said, I've rented an electric car for a 4-day road trip. She said, I spent more time charging it than I did sleeping. And I'm thinking, that is pretty fascinating. So even if we do have the electric cars, are they the solution? I go back to what I always say. We got to be good stewards. I get it. I'm not against clean energy. Believe me, I'm all for it. The transition is the key. And it's been obvious right now to some that the president, I think they want to force you to go green. Debbie Staben now, I think was her name. She's a Michigan senator. Last week, she drove from Michigan to D.C. in her new electric vehicle, right? She drove past every gas station. That's pretty good. You know what she said? She said this, and I'm going to quote her. Quote, I am looking forward to the opportunity for us to move to vehicles that aren't going to be dependent on the whims of oil companies and international markets. That opportunity is being pushed on, of course, by these high prices that you're paying. The Biden administration seems to want to have, despite the president's rhetoric, to the oil companies, prices remain high. The problem, of course, you know, if you want an EV, you want an electric vehicle, it's pricey. And Senator Stabenow didn't mention the fact that she didn't have to stop and charge her vehicle. The longest range vehicle is just over 500 miles. That's pretty good. Unlike a gas vehicle, you can pull into a gas station and fill it up on your way. You do have to spend time charging your car, so you're down for a little bit. But this was the problem a couple of reporters from the Wall Street Journal encountered on a road trip when they went from New Orleans to Chicago. They rented electric vehicles to see how it would work. And as I said, they ended up, they spent more time charging the vehicle than they did sleeping. And charging it took from, I think, a half an hour. I think anywhere from a half an hour, which didn't seem like much to them, to overnight. But I'm not the expert in this. I've invited a friend of mine. A man who's a retired executive vice president and director of a corporate development for Insight. They're a big telecommunication company, especially in the Green Bay area. And a man who's given a lot of consultation and advice to Relevant Radio to stop by. He's going to buy electric vehicles. We spoke to him in the past. He says that you're going to be getting into driverless vehicles before you know it. And honestly, I'm kind of with him. I almost can't wait for that. But Rob Reardon joins me today. It's always good to have him and tap into his expertise, his knowledge. And I think he just got back from the NAB where he was doing some research. Hey, Rob, thank you for making time for me today. Always good to have you on the air.
Drew, I appreciate it. Love getting a chance to talk to you. And boy, I tell you, you got a fun topic tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, I think of you with these cars. I know you said to me last time you were on, we talked about driverless cars, but we are really moving towards EVs. You're going to buy one, right? That's what you told me before, I think, and you're looking forward to that. Give me your whole sense of what's going on, where we are, and what the future might look like.
Well, it is kind of interesting. Actually, I'm going to be buying a Tesla Cybertruck, and my wife is actually looking at buying a VW, both electric vehicles.
Cool.
And what it's fascinating to hear Rachel Wolf's article on the Wall Street Journal. She talked about her nightmare of going from New Orleans to Chicago, and it really was, when you went through it, it was a nightmare. But it's interesting, at the same time that she's writing that article, Ginger Z from ABC Good Morning America is taking a electric vehicle and going from New York to Miami by way of Detroit. And the difference between the two people's experience was night and day. What we found out is first of all, that you've got to go to the right states if you're going to try and drive an electric car. I can't say Wisconsin's necessarily one of the right states, but definitely Louisiana and Tennessee and Kentucky and some of the ones that coming up from New Orleans that they ran through really didn't help. So as an example, between the two different vehicles, the really fast chargers that are available, there were only 1,500 that were available on Rachel's trip, the Wall Street Journal trip. On the ABC trip with their operation, they had 3,800. So they had, you know, 2.5 times the number of stops they could make and places they could charge up. And that made a big difference. That's why one had a happy trip, one had a sad trip. And the other thing that happened was that there's two big networks out there. Well, actually, there's one network, and there's a lot of individual that have the power stations. Tesla has one network that talks to everything and talks to each other, and that one has about 58% of the charging units out there, the superchargers. The other one is everybody else, and so it's not maintained the same way. It doesn't interact as well, and so if you don't have a Tesla, you got that kind of drawback. But that's kind of the things we're facing. But you, Drew, when you mentioned this to me, it made me think a little bit about what do we do if you don't have a charging station. Well, back in the day when my dad was first driving, and Dad now was born in 1916. He's been passed for a number of years, but he told the tale about when he would take his Model T out and he'd be driving with that. He had to carry gas with him because there weren't enough gas stations. One of my favorite stories was when he was out going down to Oklahoma to visit my mom. and he's on his way down. He's got a good friend, Father Wish, Father Wichlinski, but he was Father Wish as we knew him in the family. And, you know, a good holy man and otherwise, and as they're driving down, he's holding on to a gas tank, and he's got it on the running board next to his, as he's holding on to it. And as he drives along, he ends up, my dad says, "How does it look out there?" And Father Wish leaned out and was looking down, you know, at the gas tank to make sure he wasn't losing too much water, the gas as he drove. They were on a county seat over near the Pulaski area, and it was, the roads back in those days weren't that hot. Yeah. And Dad happened to hit a pothole, and right after he hit a pothole, he hit a cow manure, and that ended up going and hitting good father.
Wow.
Obviously, he wasn't too thrilled at that point, threw the gas can away and said, "Get your own gas." But, you know, it's a cute story, but it does go to the point that that back in the 20s, when you know, the first gas station was in 1905, by, you know, 1920, they only had 15,000. By 30, they had 100,000. But that's what we're facing. That's why, you know, it's going to be early, early to, you know, get hit by it.
Yeah, well, your great-grandkids then, you know, your grandkids will one day say, "Yeah, I remember my grandfather, he drove the first electric car." Because you're one of the first, you're one of the first adopters like your grandfather, your dad, I mean. Your dad was the one who went on that. Well, that's a pretty cool story, and I like that. And, you know, I'm with you. I think we're going to see more and more electric stations. I think we're going to, you know, develop, you know, better technology to hold these charges, maybe go longer distances. And I think it's going to be a big part of the fleets that one day we'll see that will pick us up at our front door and we'll be driverless. I think that's all coming. Let's talk EV for just a second, because I've got some geeky questions that I'm curious about. How long do the batteries last? You know, with your cell phone battery, it diminishes with every charge. And, you know, you go and you buy a used car. Okay, you've got some wear and tear on the engine. But I wonder what these batteries are ultimately going to cost in these cars. How long does that battery last? And what do you see in terms of the time frame before we have enough charging stations? Right now, I went to a hotel not too long ago for an event, and there was a free charging station outside. They were letting you charge up if you had an EV. I thought that was pretty cool. But eventually it's going to cost, you know, you're going to have to, and what will the cost be? So maybe a couple of things there, you know, what does it cost to charge, you know, your vehicle, and how long is the life of an EV battery? I don't know if we know that,
well, the manufacturers are coming back. I don't know what Tesla has, and Tesla, it has the, most people think it's got the best battery technology out there. Doesn't mean they got the best car, but they got the best battery technology out there. So I can't tell you what theirs is, but I know that, like the Volkswagen and otherwise, they're telling me that they're guaranteeing an 8-year life. Now, that means it's going to last longer than that, because their warranty is to say 8 years on that. So I think there is, you know, they do recognize that there is a life cycle on it. We're looking at, is there a possibility to recharge the batteries or to re-energize the batteries? That's one of the things they're going to be looking at. But there is a time window there. The one big difference between an EV, though, and a standard car is, a standard car, you've got over 2,000 different working parts on it. And you've only got about 5 or 6 or maybe a dozen on an electric vehicle. So you don't need to bring it in for a tune-up. You don't need to go in and get any of the, you know, check your carburetor or geez, your spark plug's working, or, you know, any of those kind of things disappear. Because basically, if you got tires and you've got your braking mechanism, and then you've got your batteries, and there's not a lot else out there. I mean, a light bulb goes out or whatever, but... That's one of the reasons for the cost savings.
Then I'm assuming the updates are cool too. I mean, it's just a software update, right? Something that would be automatically downloaded, and you know, the car is constantly up with the latest software, like your cell phone or your computer is, which is kind of cool. I think the technology is awesome. I do. I've got some questions though, even just about, you know, where we get the source. And I know I'm talking a lot about batteries, but I know that China right now. Who is our greatest competitor? Who knows what's going to happen in the Taiwan Strait and what kind of conflicts we might see? They are making huge inroads into Africa, and they are dominating a lot of mineral rights and a lot of the essential materials they need for batteries. We don't necessarily have that here in the States. Where does the material come from for these batteries? And will that be something that will drive up cost as well in the future as demand for that increases?
I have to do some more checking on that, but I believe there is one area in the U.S. where they've got they have some of the raw resources we're looking for, and they're trying to develop that. One of the problems, of course, that we have, problem, advantage, I don't know what you want to call it, but China has very has terrible ecology. They really don't care, and as such, there are no restrictions, and they're able to, you know, do what they want to do with, you know, may not be safe, but we can still do it because of the government's control. Whereas we have the EPA and we have all of the other things that are saying, hey, wait a second, we got to do it safely otherwise. So, you know, and we get a little afraid. Nuclear power is an example. Nuclear power can be done very safely. The next generation looks to be very good in that. And yet, you know, Americans are very afraid of nuclear because somebody in you know, Chernobyl screwed up. I mean, so it's some of it's real, some of it's not. But, yeah, there are other sources, and we as a country have to be very aggressive in the sense that we have to protect those rights. We have to look for other rights. We have to find good trading partners. Taiwan is an example that is a very great trading partner, but you know what the problem there with China, and yet most of the chips are made there. Now we're having moves to bring that back and to try and, you know, Intel's doing stuff to try to bring chips back in. The EVs, by the way, one of the other things that's going to happen is the infrastructure bill that went through.
Yeah.
And it's $7.5 billion that's going to be spent over the next 5 years building the filling stations, if you will, or charging stations. So, you know, it needs good government policy.
It does.
Needs good, you know, support by people to recognize that we have an advantage and an opportunity. We just have to take advantage of it, and we have to move on the opportunities.
Yeah, I had mentioned on the air the other day, they were talking about rolling, you know, blackouts or brownouts, I should say, in different parts of the country. Our power grid is old. That needs to be fortified. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if we happen to go green, and I do think it's coming, and this will be the future, but what kind of strain does that put on the power grid when so many people are already tapping it and they've got to conserve it that way? And then you spoke about, you know, environmental concerns with China and places like that have these horrible records. I think about all these batteries when these cars come to the end of their life or the batteries die. I mean, what do we do with that type of stuff? So there's a lot of environmental questions that I guess have to be addressed too.
They do, and we've got to be aware of it, and we've got to think about it ahead of time. And if we do, I think we can solve the problems. I think that the battery issue can be solved, and they've got a lot of people working on it. And as they say, we've got a window in here that we're not. It's not like nuclear waste where we're trying to store it for the next 20 millenniums or whatever. But I do think that there's some issues we have to come through, but I don't think it's going to be insurmountable, quite frankly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think one of the things on the grid is that while it is getting old and otherwise, people are starting to do more in the area of solar. My wife and I are going to be in solar on our roof, and there's still, you know, that's got some advantages, and what that does is actually feeds back into the grid, so you're getting power locally as opposed to buying it, from someplace outside of even the state. So, you know, there's some opportunities, but I do think we have to protect the grid because we also know we're, you know, that's vulnerable.
Hey, with that solar power that you're putting on your roof, I just saw something. I don't know whether it got emailed to me or it popped up on a website I was looking at. They have these solar, maybe it's Musk that's doing, I don't know who's doing it. So they have solar powered shingles. I mean,
yes.
Are you putting panels on your roof or is this like all integrated so it looks like a shingled house?
Well, no, it's actually going to be panels, and the reason for it is because it is Musk and it is Tesla, and they've decided that where I live in my particular part of the country, nobody likes to use the sun anyhow, so they're not making it available here. You know, it's
tundra.
It's one of those things that it's just a timing to the market and otherwise. Yeah. And I think that that's an early product. I think they've had some success with it. I want to be on the leading edge, but not on the bleeding edge of technology.
Yeah.
And that one,
I got you.
You know,
all right, well, let's do this. Let me open the phones too. If you want to join us, I'll go to the phones. We'll take your calls. Feel free to sound off, share your views, your perspectives, your concerns. My guest today, Rob Reardon, and the number here to get in is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Always good to hear from you. We'll start just south of where you live, Appleton, Wisconsin. Michael is listening to us there. Hi, Michael. You're on the air with Mr. Reardon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is based around the battery topic. I drive every day in a Prius, and I put last 4 days, 275, 539, 308, 375 miles as of today, and I'm driving right now. The concern I have is if we're going all electric, how long is it going to take to power up a battery? How much life are we going to get out of that charge per day? I fill up maybe once, sometimes twice a day. And what's it going to cost to get a full charge? And I just worry about standing in line, and I fight daylight every day to get from property to property. Those are my concerns. Wow. Those are my questions, and I wonder if you have any insight on those questions.
Awesome.
Yeah, actually, it's a very, very good question, because one of the things that we're trying to find out is that, you know, can it be charged faster? And the superchargers will do, unlike the article in Wall Street Journal, the poor gal was stuck on type 2 or class 2 chargers, and those you get basically for every minute you get a mile, which is really great. That means 200 minutes. You know, it's not even that. It's worse than that. But on the chargers that are the superchargers on those, on about 25 minutes, you can get about 200 miles. So that means you're going to have 25 minutes. You're going to be sitting there staring at whatever, doing some exercise, whatever. And in your role and how many miles you're driving, that's not going to do it. That's not going to cut it. The technology, the problem is the batteries are big enough to support what they can today. They've gone from 250 miles range when the Tesla first came out to 500 miles with what the Cybertruck will be doing. But, you know, I'm not necessarily in the near future seeing something where they're going to be going 750 or anything like that. So you're kind of in that box that if you go beyond the 500 limit in a day, now, once you get to a supercharge station, you're back up. Or if you charge, if you have a class 2 and you charge overnight, you can get, you know, up to about 80%. So, you know, you'll be okay, but you really don't want to be at a situation where you absolutely have to get somewhere. And that is a drawback. There is a time. It takes at least twice as long as it does for gas to fill up.
All right. Hey, thank you for your call. Good to have you here. Let me move along because I only have a few minutes, and I want to give a few people a chance to get in. Richard in Austin, Texas, you're on the air with Rob Reardon. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. I just think that everybody forgets the elephant in the room, that they're not really clean. They have to get their electricity from coal-fired plants, gas-fired plants, or nuclear power plants. And so everybody touts them as being clean energy, but they're really not.
Nor is it when you heat your house or turn on your lights or otherwise. Yeah, it is. It's in the same thing as everything else we're doing. But the big difference is that the carbon gases are not. It's not as bad as the alternative. So yeah, it's not perfectly clean. No question about it. But it is. All the studies have shown that I've seen, everything I've read, is that it is cleaner than the car. The internal combustion car, and as such, it's a trade-off. It hasn't gotten it all done, but at least it's taken it down.
Gotcha. Let's move along. Thank you very much, Richard, for your call. Linda's in Hammond, Indiana. Linda, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, Linda.
Hello. My question or comment, one of the red flags that I have, and the reason is, a couple of years ago, my husband thought he was being real environmental and economical by buying a brand of yard equipment that all could use the same battery.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in the years since, they keep making batteries that last longer and charge faster, and then you have to buy new equipment to go with those. You can't recharge the old batteries. You can't buy new ones for your old equipment. And my husband has a box full of these batteries now that he can't do anything with. What is the plan for them how are we going to dispose of all these old batteries? And every time they come up with a new one, can your car replace it with one that charges faster and longer?
Great question, Linda. Thank you.
Yeah, it is a good question, and there's one big difference, because I've got the same thing where I've got different, even if I have, if I buy one manufacturer's equipment, then I buy somebody else's, they don't talk to each other supposedly, and that's even though they're both the same, both batteries. In the car situation, a little bit different in the sense that you're not going to be replacing the batteries on a realistic sense. I mean, the batteries are in the vehicle. They're going to be, I shouldn't say that, maybe they will come up with a way in 10 years or in 15 years when you decide you want to change the batteries, you could change them and upgrade them, get a new battery. But I think you'd probably get a new vehicle at that time, which is similar to how we hold a car right now for about 11 years. So it's one of those things where those batteries are not going to be replaced until the vehicle's replaced. So they are good. They've said they're going to be lasting for years, and you know that you're going to get this much mileage out of it. It may deteriorate a little bit, but it's supposed to stay fairly close to what the level is for it. So it's not quite the same because the other ones are a manufacturer is making a piece of equipment and they want to sell a second piece of equipment. Well, the way they can sell a second piece of equipment is by making the first piece of equipment no longer obsolete or make it obsolete. And that's not the case with the car.
Hey, Rob, I'm going to have to probably wrap it up. My apologies. I'm going to bring you back because there's so many people who want to get in and ask you questions regarding electric vehicles. Final thoughts from you, and just in terms of timeline, how far away are we? I know that they're becoming more frequent. I see Teslas on the road all over the place. My nephew wants to buy a truck that's EV, but what do you see as the timeline and whatever final thoughts you want to leave us with?
Well, I think what we're finding right now, talking to auto dealers and manufacturers, what they've told me is that people are either buying EVs or they're buying hybrids. They're not picking up the internal combustion only engines anymore. It's just not as big of a sale. General Motors has said that they are going to be completely, I think it's by, I'm trying to remember what it is. It's not very far down the road that they expect to be entirely EV, electric vehicles. The same thing as I know that Ford is looking at also, and they both have set a deadline as to when they're going to stop doing the internal combustion engine altogether. It's a whole lot less maintenance. It's a whole lot cleaner, but it's the big thing for them is that it is something that they are feel they have to do. The other thing is that for the next 5 years, they're going to be putting a lot of money, federal money, into $7.5 billion is a fair amount of money to try and get the charging stations going. So I think it'll be fairly quick. By that I mean, however, it's going to be. You know, I'm buying a car, but I'm buying it, and I won't get it for a year, and I'm happy because that means that in a year from now there'll be more stations out there.
That's great. Well, I'll take a ride with you. All right, when you get your Tesla, it'll be fun. Gas is going to stay high. Is that what you expect though in the interim?
In the interim, it's going to stay high. I don't know how long it's going to be before it comes down. I do think there's a lot of pressures that's keeping it up there, and it will be certainly through the summer and whether it'll be into the fall and otherwise. I have seen that airlines are anticipating in the fall they may be able to drop their prices, and that would mean that they're anticipating that the fuel costs are going to go down because that's the biggest driver for them. So there may be a light at the end of the tunnel, but that's only a guess.
Hey, Rob, thank you. Looking forward to talking with you again. I always appreciate you making time. My love to your family, too, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good, Drew. You take care.
Thank you. That's Rob Reardon. I'm up against the clock. I've got to take a break. I would talk to him for 3 hours. I find the topic fascinating, including the future of driverless cars. I really think that's on the heels of this. We're going to see much more, but I got to take a short pause. If you're concerned about gas prices, if things are rising, if you are filled with anxiety, if you've got fear about what's unfolding, you don't know what the future has in store, stay with me. I'll give you a solution. Great conversation coming up straight ahead. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so good to take a look at all that's unfolding in the world and around us through the eyes of our faith. And that's really something I want to do today. You know, I say it all the time, and look, I'm a weak man. I try to be a good man. I try to be saintly. I try to be a man of faith. I try to walk on water at times. I don't mean that in a literal sense, figuratively. And Many times God's put me to the test, and I find that, the faith wanes. The fear conquers. You can't do that. And I told the Lord, I refuse to give in to fear and anxiety. I refuse to do it. I will trust in you. I will trust in you. That's my motto. That's my mantra. That's what I live by. And I know that you could be in a situation right now where you're facing some really difficult times. Maybe the doctor's diagnosis was not good. You know, maybe your finances are really bad right now, and you're hearing about the cost of gas going up, right? Maybe inflation keeps biting at your paycheck. Maybe the war in the Ukraine right now is giving you anxiety. There's fear, perhaps, of a third world war. Maybe it's the addiction in the family or the broken marriage or relationship. It's easy to give in to fear, to wonder what the future is going to be like for you, let alone for your children, right? That is, I think, a great spiritual test for us. And this is your opportunity to really exercise trust in God, to show him how much you love him, and to really defeat the evil one. You know, when we pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, what do we say? We say, Jesus, I trust in you, right? We repeat that over and over again. Those are very simple words. And when fear rises, that's my advice. You just say that simple five-word prayer over and over again. Jesus, I trust in you. See, the evil one, one of the great tools in his toolbox is fear. He likes to foment it. He likes to create it. He likes to rob you of that trust that the Lord wants you to have. Fear and anxiety over the conflicts in the world, fear over what's going on in your home or what's going to happen in your future. What did Christ tell us, right? He says, be not afraid. Be not afraid, because when you allow fear to overtake life, you're actually blocking out love. St. John said that there is no fear in love, that perfect love casts out fear, since fear has to do with punishment. And he who fears is not perfected in love. I came across a very interesting entry from an exorcist. I just want to share this with you, and then Monsignor Rossetti is going to be stopping by. He's the president and founder of the St. Michael Center for Spiritual Renewal. It's a nonprofit Catholic organization that oversees exorcisms. He's also a licensed psychologist. He's a research associate professor at Catholic University of America at CUA. And he's the author of The Diary of an American Exorcist, Demons, Possession, and the Modern Day Battle Against Ancient Evil. If you want to read it, check that out. But let me share with you, I've gotten this email from this exorcist diary. And the headline today was Satan Incites Fear, or whenever I received it, I forget what day it was. But let me just share this with you, okay? And then we'll talk about this reality. It begins, the exorcism stalled out. We were saying all the right prayers, but the process of liberation was going nowhere. As we looked into the cause, the afflicted person spoke about her fear of Satan. She was terrified. She was hesitant, responding to the prayers for fear of riling him and incurring his wrath. She's referring, of course, to Satan. Her fear was understandable. Through the exorcism, the demons were constantly threatening her. They would say, "We will get you tonight," they yelled in her brain. "We'll torture you. We'll drag you to hell." Then they promised her, "But if you stop the prayers, we'll leave you alone." It's a frightening thought, isn't it? Our Blessed Mother, in a very famous Marian apparition, said that the devil is strong with those who fear him and weak with those who despise him. You know, I was also struck by another message of Our Lady. She says, the one who prays does not fear the future. The one who fasts does not fear evil. I think that's a solution for today, isn't it? It's prayer and fasting. Those are the two things we need to do. So, again, I'll just finish this final paragraph of this email that I received. It says, while we cannot confirm she said those words, they certainly ring true in our experience as exorcists. I told the terrified woman, in hell, the slaves of Satan cower in fear. As long as you do, you will never be free. An important part of the process of liberation is learning to trust Jesus. As the scriptures say, submit yourself to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. That's James 4:7. I'm joined right now by somebody who understands this intimately. Again, he's the author of The Diary of an American Exorcist. It's my delight to talk with and to tap into the expertise Monsignor Stephen Rossetti. Monsignor, thanks again for giving me your time. Good afternoon.
Hello, Drew. It's great to be with you.
Always good to talk to you. I was struck by that particular passage, and it really spoke to me. I mean, one of the great tools of the evil one is fear, isn't it? And yet today, you know, we look at the rising cost of gas. People wonder how they're going to feed their kids or get to work. You know, we look at the potential of a third world war. I mean, so many areas that fear can overcome. And I know you wrote recently about how fear and anxiety are these tools. How do they separate us from God? Maybe take us through that. Explain how Satan uses this and the ways that we can rise above it.
Well, first of all, Satan likes to think he is God. Of course he isn't. And wants to make people think he's all-powerful. Like he said to Jesus in the temptation, fall down and worship me. And of course, Jesus said, you know, worship is for God alone. So Satan wants us to worship him, to fear him. And because he's evil, fully evil, the way he rules in hell and those who are subject to him is through fear and intimidation. He doesn't love anyone. He loves himself. And so he tries to make people worship him, and he controls through generating fear.
So obviously the people of the Ukraine, those who are either in war-torn countries or are being persecuted for their faith, they live in fear of what could happen to them. That's sure. A little bit different, though. I mean, that's a realistic fear, right? And, yeah. And sometimes, yeah, I want to qualify. I mean, fear is not a bad thing. Sometimes we should be, you know, fearful of going into a bad situation and avert that situation. But
right, you know, a certain fear is healthy.
Right.
You know, to be afraid of, you know, falling off a building or something. Sure,
right, exactly.
And they say, as they say in foxholes, I mean, everyone's frightened.
That's right.
But the brave person is the one who makes an act of the will and say, you know, you said earlier, Jesus, I trust in you. I choose to trust in God, even though some motion of fear might be inside me.
That's right. That's a good point. It's so true. Just really, trust is an act of the will, isn't it? I mean, I might say, oh, yeah. My gosh, the math for my finances don't add up. I don't know how I'm going to keep the house or the car. Or the doctor told me, yeah, I have stage 4 cancer. You know, I only have 6 months to live. I mean, those things sometimes are really hard to get beyond. We put our trust in the temporal, and yet God can do anything. He can certainly, he's the author of all the laws of nature. He can suspend them and can change them. Placing trust in God when you can't see beyond the situation that you're facing, that's hard. So what advice would you give to those in that situation? Now, how do you get the vision that there's more to your life than the situation in front of you? Or maybe I should rephrase it. You know, I should say there's more to God, right? I mean, how do we get people to believe that, to get out of the boat, to walk on the water, to put their trust in God?
Well, one thing, for example, is that the more we pray, receive the sacraments, live a holy life, the more we have a deep internal sense of God's presence in us. You know, faith is not just some sort of vacuous thing that with nothing to support it. No, actually, there is this spiritual sense inside of us that we nurture, the sense of God's presence. And Jesus said that, my peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. So there is this internal sense of peace and the Lord's presence which abides in our hearts. And so when the storm comes, you know, when the wind blows and the house is built on rock, as the scriptures say, and so that internal sense of peace, that presence of God anchors us even in the midst of a very frightening situation.
So, you know, we talk about exercising trust, right? And it is a type of exercise. It's like using the muscles of our body. I think the more you put your trust in God, the stronger, maybe even the easier, I guess. It's like virtue, you know? I mean, practicing, creating good habits takes exercise and discipline. And I think trust is the same way. I don't know what your techniques are for it. I mean, how do you do that? You know, what's your advice for building that spiritual muscle, so to speak?
Yeah, one thing I would say is focusing on the present.
Yeah.
One of the real things that can scare us is if we focus on the future. And how many times we worry about something in the future that never actually happens? So as the scriptures say, you know, do not worry about tomorrow. Each day has enough trouble of its own, Matthew 6:34. So the idea is to focus on the present and to just bite off the present. Do what you can now, and that becomes more manageable. When we start, you know, fantasizing or catastrophizing, if we will, about the future, then it spins out of control.
Yeah. My guest today is Monsignor Rossetti. If you want to join us, you can dial in right now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. We'll take a few of your calls. We're approaching the twilight of the show, as I like to say, the final few moments. So, Mary in Illinois, you're first up on deck. We'll get your call and take all your calls when I return. Again, 888-914-9149, taking a look at a spiritual response to what's happening. How do we rise above the fear of our current day? It's one of the powerful tactics of the evil one. He makes you want to believe that he's more powerful and that the future's a dark one for you. I believe the future's a bright one, especially when we exercise trust and we walk with the Lord. I'll be right back.
The hope lives here. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. I wish I could hang out with you another 3 hours, but I only have a few moments left with you today. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking today with Monsignor Stephen Rossetti, president and founder of the St. Michael Center for Spiritual Renewal and the author of Diary of an American Exorcist, Demons, Possession, and the Modern Day Battle Against Ancient Evil. We're taking a look at how to rise above the great fear that seems to predominate so many households and so many hearts. And of course, when you see the news, anxiety can rise, fear can predominate it, the threats of world war, the rising cost of gas and inflation, all the other problems, COVID, it's really easy to be overcome, but we're to walk with the Lord, right? You know, I often think of that great psalm where you walk through the shadow of death, right? And yet you fear no evil. The Lord is with you. He's on your side, and you are not to fear. And that should be the takeaway today. So don't give in to fear. It's one of the great tactics of the evil one. Monsignor, I want to get to the phones. Before I jump to the first few phone calls here, I'd love your insight on some tips, some practical tips, to when we begin to encounter this type of feeling or we feel overwhelmed, that we can maybe employ. Or is there something you'd recommend to those who are listening to employ both physically or mentally?
Sure. You know, we are body, mind, and spirit, and you can sort of treat anxiety on any different level. You can start with a spirit and pray. You can start with a psyche and remind yourself to trust in Jesus. Or one way to attack it is from the body. The body can store up the anxiety and the tension. And so the idea is that when the body relaxes, and it trusts, if you will, then it can inform and help the mind and the spirit. So what do we tell people as psychologists? We say, look, breathe. One of the first things, slow, deep breaths. One of the first things that people do when they're frightened is they hyperventilate. They breathe fast and shallowly. So long, slow, deep breaths. And so oftentimes in a clinical session, I'll have them breathe deeply, big, long, slow, deep breaths. And then I'll have them exercise and relax their muscles. So we don't realize how much tension we carry around all the time in our muscles. Right. And when we actually relax them for a moment, it relaxes the mind and the spirit as well.
That's great advice. Mary in Illinois, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Monsignor Rossetti. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a particular question. If there is some kind of obsession going on, and it is the enemy, and you, like your Strong Prayer Life, daily mass, weekly confession, all this, and battling it in addition, and it continues, like how do you offer that kind of, basically, how do you really offer that kind of suffering? Mm-hmm. Because it's a very difficult suffering.
Yeah. Right. The suffering of the mind, as you're saying, Mary, yes. And Satan takes our normal, we all have a little bit of fear, of course, it's part of being human. And then he sort of manipulates it and exaggerates it. And so what's called demonic obsessions, which you're referring to, that so Satan stokes the fear in our minds. And so one way to help treat that is to focus the mind on holy things like meditation, reading the scriptures, for example. That can have a very calming effect. Of course, I love Eucharistic adoration. I think there's incredible graces there. And one of those graces is to really fill the mind with Jesus and cast out the darkness.
All right, Mary, thank you very much. You know, you talk about oppression from the evil one. Have you ever seen, I'm sure you're probably familiar with, The Exorcism of Emily Rose? You familiar with that story, Father? Because
based on a real case.
And she, well, maybe you put it in context for a minute. This is a woman who was actually possessed, right, by the evil one, but she offered that suffering up. Am I correct in that?
And she, a German young woman, she offered it up. There are some concerns about the way the case was dealt with.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, she died from malnutrition. But she felt that she was a suffering soul. Now, that would be unusual in the sense that most possessed people are not possessed by just simply being suffering souls. Although St. Mary of Jesus Crucified, the little Arab from Lebanon, she was one. But any one of us, any of our sufferings, we can offer them up to the Lord, and the Lord turns that into grace.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's go back to the phones. Again, 888-914-9149, just a few minutes left, but we'll go to New Mexico next. Maria, thank you for waiting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, my son has been for years having mental problems. Everything has gotten worse. I've also seen evil involved. But sadly, even some of the priests don't believe in it, don't think it's, you know, and even, you know, like medications don't help. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, and right now he's facing a very serious, he's in court right now, facing a very serious case.
I'm sorry to hear
right
that.
Now at this moment.
Oh, Maria, we're sorry to hear that.
It's a terrible suffering. I'm sorry, Maria, that when parents have their child have problems. You know, it's a difficult discernment. As someone who's both an exorcist and a psychologist, it can be a difficult discernment, especially when people are in, say, the late teens, early 20s, whether or not they really have a mental illness or whether they have a spiritual problem or maybe both. And so then it takes some time to help discern that and apply the best remedy. What we've typically found, by the way, is the best thing typically tends to be a combination of both. Both a good psychotherapy, appropriate medications, as well as some healing prayers.
Yeah. Maria, let's pray a Hail Mary right now for your son and his court case, for his liberation, for his conversion. We'll pray. Dear Lady, we just entrust him to you and everyone who's facing these types of situations. I'm going to pray for this mother and all mothers and fathers who suffer because of the path that your child has taken, and we just ask for your mercy. And dear Lady, we turn to you as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Father, and may Almighty God bless you and your son and entire family, Father, and all suffering people, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen.
It's really tough. You know, I was listening to this mother here, and her son is having those issues, but we prayed the chaplet about an hour ago, and I hear so many people call up with, there was a 12-year-old girl, my producer shared one of the Twitter intentions that came in, who tried to commit suicide, 12 years old. I mean, how do you do that at 12? You're a child still at 12 years old, and yet we see this incredible rise, a 300% increase in suicide today. We see anxiety levels, Monsignor, through the roof, and depression too. It's almost an epidemic. I'd almost call it a pandemic. It's happening all across the world. How do you discern what's going on? Why the rise today? Have we opened ourselves up more to the demonic? Do you have an explanation for what you're seeing in terms of the scourge, if you will, of anxiety in the culture and in the hearts of so many people?
Well, in the pandemic, the CDC has said that there's been a quadrupling of anxiety and depression. So that's an obvious exacerbation of anxiety and depression is the pandemic. But also, you know, I think that as people stop practicing the faith as society becomes sadly more isolated and more violent, it creates a whole unsafe, frightening environment. And then as a breakdown in the family as well, it creates an instability in a child's development. So there's so many factors these days which were not around when I was a child, right, that really I think we can understand why young people are suffering today.
Thank you again for your time. Great to have you with us, and keep us in your mass, okay, in your prayers. We'll do the same for you.
Thanks, Drew. God bless you and your ministry.
God bless you. Thank you so much. That's Monsignor Stephen Rossetti. I always enjoy talking to him. Very balanced man. And please say a prayer for him and for his priesthood and for his intentions. I'm out of time. Can you believe that? Where does it go? I wish I could hang out with you more. Kale Clark's coming up, but I'll be back tomorrow. We've got a wonderful program giving you a very unique look at life tomorrow, the spiritual events that are swirling around us as well as the temporal. Pray for me. I'll remember you tonight in my prayers. Until then, God bless.
Tell one other person about it. It's such a great way to evangelize.
The Relevant Radio app, your Catholic everything app.
Get live radio, podcasts, news, prayers. It's free.
The continuously updated Relevant Radio app. It's in your app store.